Welcome back, dear listeners, to the Dish with Dina podcast. I am so happy to have you join us again today. My guest is Karen Ross. Karen and I dish about what it means to live and lead with kindness, even when it feels like the world is against us. Karen just published her sixth book, The Kind Leader, a practical guide to eliminating fear, creating trust, and leading with kindness, which is a must-read for anyone who leads people at work, at home, and in the community. This book will actually be offered as a limited time free giveaway through our Instagram pages in the weeks that follow the time that this episode airs. Karen is also the founder and president of the Love and Kindness Project Foundation, a registered public charity and grassroots movement spreading kindness person to person around the world. So sit back, enjoy the conversation, and let's dish. Welcome, Karen Ross, to the Dish with Dina podcast. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to chat with me.
Dina, I'm super excited to be on your show. Thank you so much for inviting me.
I'm super excited too. As I often start out my episodes with conversing with my guests and taking a little bit of a trip down memory lane in our worlds of how we've come to know each other. In your case, we don't know each other at all. I found you online, and I often say I do not believe in coincidences. I think I might have either followed a hashtag or something that day or that week when I was looking up stories to share on my Instagram page, and I came across one of yours, and then I immediately started following you because your philosophy is something that I really truly believe in, and especially in the case of what we've all been going through in the last few years with trying to manage our quote unquote normal lives during the pandemic, your mission, your messages just really spoke to me on a human level. And so I've basically just been following you around from that point forward and watching everything that you do and say and sharing it with my audience as well. So I'm just so thrilled that we were able to cross paths on the virtual space. And who knows, maybe at some point we might meet in person too.
I will absolutely look forward to that. And thank you so much. I have to tell you, I have met so many fabulous people online, and some of them I've known for years and never met in person. Some people I've known for 4 or 5 years, like just from being on social media, and then we meet in person. So I always say a stranger is just a friend you haven't met yet. So now we're friends.
Oh, I love that. Already starting off with the warm and fuzzies and kindness. So this is going to be the theme of our conversation today. But as I pointed out earlier to you before we began our conversation, the podcast that I started a couple of years ago was really just to bring people together to point out similarities versus differences, and everybody eats. So I would love to learn a little bit more about your food history. What background, where did you grow up? What kind of, and if any cultural or traditional foods came into play? Can you share a little bit about your food behaviors when you were a child?
Absolutely. And I actually grew up in Canada, so you might hear a little bit of the like out about house accent. And I grew up in a very traditional Jewish household, and we actually kept strictly kosher. And it was really interesting because I didn't grow up in a Jewish area. We were, my family was probably one of the only Jewish families, so we had this different food tradition. So for people who don't know about being kosher, there's very strict dietary laws of what kinds of food you can eat and not eat. You can't eat milk and meat together. You have two different sets of dishes to eat on. And it was very interesting growing up in a whole different food culture than actually almost all of the people that I was friends with. Or, you know, as a kid growing up, you go to other people's house and they're going to feed you bacon and you say, okay, I'm sorry that, in our cultural tradition, we don't eat bacon. People think that's very unusual.
Right. And that's something too, that no matter where we are brought up, what our cultural background might be, and or if we're making certain decisions for ourselves in the foods that we're eating, that there could be positive and negative influences and external factors to take into account there too. And so that really plays a role in how we end up socializing or being able to integrate into other populations and in your case, obviously you had certain restrictions, so you could perhaps hang out with kids, but you couldn't necessarily eat what they're eating, unfortunately. And so can you share a little bit about how that turned into, over your later childhood, earlier adult years, how did that affect who you ended up becoming once you were on your own?
Well, interestingly, I actually, once I was on my own, I stopped following a strict kosher diet. But one of the things about keeping a kosher diet is that, of course, animals are in the way that they're butchered are supposed to be killed very humanely, right? And I don't actually think killing animals in any way is humane. But now, as an adult, I'm vegan. And so I don't eat anything that would cause harm to an animal. And people say, well, are you vegan because of health concerns? And I'm not really vegan because of health concerns. I'm vegan because of kindness concerns. And I think that part of it came from actually growing up in a kosher home and having this focus on, well, how are animals, you know, butchered humanely, even though, as I said, I don't really think that there's a way. But I think that's part of where that idea of, you know, that kindness needs not only to be extended just to people, but to be extended to animals as well. And although I am vegan, I will respect people's food culture first. So if I went to somebody's home and they didn't know that this was my food preference, or all they had was meat, or all they knew how to cook was meat, and they had put their time and effort into cooking for me, and that was all that was available, I would eat it. I would absolutely eat it, because I would never disrespect someone over my own food choices. I would respect that person first.
Oh, that, see, now that is kindness, because it's hard thing sometimes to take your own personal tenets and be able to shift in that way in order to accommodate someone else. And so that therein lies the, I think, what is very lovely part of your personality of taking in other people's perspectives. And again, you know, being respectful to other people who do follow a vegan diet or might also have some sort of dietary restrictions or preferences. Not everybody has to do that. I personally, on my own journey of food, I kind of wavered between vegan, vegetarian, and now I guess I'm more pescatarian. But it's just because I know my stomach does not do well with certain foods. So I would probably end up having to turn down somebody who was feeding me meat, only because, as bad as I would feel that that might be the only food available, I just digestively, I just know I would not be able to tolerate it, you know, many hours down the line. However, if you fed me ice cream, I would be totally fine with that. Whether or not I'm lactose intolerant, I will always make room for tummy issues when it comes to ice cream. So go figure.
Well, actually, now you made me think of a couple of other things. First of all, something from growing up. I grew up around the corner from a Dairy Queen. And so I actually think they have what fabulous vegan ice cream now. So I actually think that you should eat an ice cream a day.
Yes.
And so you and I are united in our ice cream eating. And a couple of other things, just, you know, being respectful about other people's food habits, you know, and food needs. That when I first moved to just outside of Chicago, where I live, that my daughter became best friends with a little girl who came from a Muslim family. Mm-hmm. And so the Muslim halal rules and the kosher rules, even though I didn't keep kosher anymore, those rules are very similar. And the little girl, her mother felt always very comfortable sending her to my house, because she knew that actually I understood why one might keep a religious food rule, that I understood what the rules were. And she always felt super comfortable that I wouldn't let her daughter eat something
right
that, you know, was forbidden. And actually, years and years later, because our daughters are 27 now, so Alifia is actually the secretary of the Love and Kindness Project Foundation. So that kind of respect for each other's culture and respect for food really kept us together for so many years.
Oh my gosh, that's the gift that keeps on giving in such a personal level. That's so, so sweet. And I mean, I think that speaks to, you know, when we talk about food access and food security, And especially in my world as a dietitian with nutrition, while I recognize there's so much information and sometimes misinformation out there about the way that food is processed, the food supply itself, some foods that may or may not be considered, you know, inflammatory, or depending on what celebrity influencers or more well-known doctors or healthcare providers on social media tend to put out as far as research and quote unquote guidance and recommendations. Ultimately, I just keep saying, I just want people to be fed. I just want you to eat and eat something nutritious. So however you can get that, you know, please don't worry too much about certain restrictions and rules, et cetera, unless of course you're abiding by something that is governed by your religious dietary laws. Obviously in that case, we're going to respect that, but you don't have to go out and try to get organic, grass-fed, artisanally made, whatever. If you need a bag of frozen vegetables, then that's what you're going to get, and we'll make do with what we have there, because I still want to be respectful of people's budgets, lifestyle, convenience, you know, whatever it is that they can get to be able to integrate that into their diet and just be able to eat.
I think that sounds sensible to me. I was actually having a chat with a worker at a company that I do consulting for, and she has younger children. And of course, we were sitting and she was chatting, and she was telling me that her youngest only likes to eat like pizza and chicken nuggets and all of those kind of things. And she was very worried. So when my kids were little, I have two children, and one of them, my son, who's the older one, he was an adventurous eater from the start and basically ate everything. My daughter, who is now 27, really would only eat pasta, rice, potatoes. And we had a much more varied diet. And my husband, who does all of the cooking in our family, you know, was sometimes very frustrated. But let me tell you that actually as a 27-year-old, and she, you know, lives in Brooklyn now, quite far from us, and she does a lot of cooking on her own, she actually eats a totally varied diet. So the advice that I gave to the very nice young lady who I was chatting with, I said, you know, I think you shouldn't worry about it so much. You know, if your daughter's healthy, she's gaining weight, and she's eating things, then, you know, you can do what you can do. But probably when she's 27, she'll actually eat a much more varied diet.
Right. Tastes change. People go through, I mean, children in particular, but also in our adult world too. Sometimes we go through different jags, or we decide at some point, this is not something that serves me anymore. I don't want to force myself to eat something that I'm not enjoying just because it's supposed to be healthy for me. So let's talk a little bit more about your family, like you yourself raising children, having a family situation. So at this point now, you are implementing vegan eating in your world, but then your children too and your husband are also eating animal free.
I've been vegan probably for almost 10 years now. And okay. So my kids have both left home probably for the last like 3 to 5 years, but I will assure you that other than me, nobody was eating a plant-based diet. And I wanted to do it for a really long time. And then one day I was actually in a business meeting, and I was sitting beside someone who was vegetarian on one side and someone who was vegan on the other side. And something really simple, but really profound struck me, was that the only reason that actually I wasn't vegan was that I kept eating meat and animal products. And then it got to be lunch hour, and actually I just had a salad and lettuce green and all of those things. And I said, the only thing that I need to do is actually choose not to eat these other things. And so many people think, you know, maybe it was hard to do that. But actually for me, it was really a decision and looking at what I was eating, and I made a sudden change. So I came home. I was on a business trip at this training, and I came home and I said to my husband, I'm not going to eat animal products anymore. And my husband, who does all the cooking, said, what? I said, yes, no, I'm not going to eat them anymore. And he has always done all of the cooking in our family. And he said, well, I'm still going to eat meat. I'm still going to eat all of those things. And I said, well, that's perfectly fine. That's your choice. But slowly, what has happened over time is that my husband now eats a predominantly vegan diet because he does all the cooking, and he's realized that there's lots of really good, tasty alternatives. And last time when he went to the doctor, And he got all his blood work done, and the doctor said, "What have you been doing differently because you've never been so healthy?" He said, "Oh, I guess it's the dietary change my wife made."
So now he finds benefits in implementing that more plant-based food. So is he completely off of animals now at this point or no?
If we eat out, then he eats, you know, he'll eat meat, but at home he doesn't. And I think one of the things that scared him, because actually he comes from a family, his mother is a fabulous cook. And my mother is a wonderful person, but not necessarily a fabulous cook. So I didn't grow up having any kind of food with any spices, including salt or any of those kind of things. And my mother-in-law is like a gourmet cook, and my husband is like a gourmet cook. So I think he was really worried,
right,
that it actually just wasn't going to taste good. But the truth is, you can use all of the same spices. You can make things taste extremely good. And I think once he realized that that wasn't going to be a problem, then it was a much easier shift. But if we go out, you know, we just went to a wedding and they had a very nice taco bar, and he, you know, had whatever kind of meat in the tacos, and he had a steak at a steakhouse that someone invited me to speak at a program, and it was at a steakhouse. He had a steak, and I don't judge him or say, don't eat that. I just think everybody's food choice should be their choice according to what works for them.
Right. Oh my gosh. So I'm making some notes here. The first thing is the whole thing about people thinking that vegetables are gross and boring and bland. We're not talking about like boiling your string beans to death and then just having lettuce. We're talking about either implementing really robust, flavorful side dishes or having plant-based foods or plant alternatives. So plant protein alternatives to meat would be things like beans or tempeh or seitan. Those are more plant, vegetable, texturized vegetable proteins that are a little bit more processed, and or tofu. Did I say tofu already? And things along those lines, you know, nuts, seeds, etc. Those have more higher fats, and they're also somewhat protein dense in the plant world too. And you can do so much stuff with that. You can roast things. You can use that as garnish. You can add texture. Again, the flavors is where a lot of the I think the when you have not grown up with, or you're not entirely sure of how to cook and how to prepare meals, you forget things like lemon juice and garlic and spices exist, and you just think, I'm just eating, you know, this really boring salad. But you can have so many flavors going on there, especially when you roast things like sweet potatoes or Brussels sprouts, and try different versions of things and jazz up your diet a little bit, because nothing's going to be wrong if you're adding on more plants to it. And in the case of your husband, he actually found out it was beneficial to his health. So that's always a good thing to hear. I really am applauding him that he maybe begrudgingly went into it, but then came out thinking this was a good choice that I made. So that's lovely. I'm so glad.
Well, thank you. And I think one of the things that really worked too was I didn't force him to do it. I just said, this is what I'm going to do, right?
Right.
And he oftentimes, and I find this in all of the kinds of work that I do, is that we think that we can talk somebody into doing something, but the truth is we don't have much luck in talking people into things. Mostly people change their own mind by doing something differently and seeing that there's a different result. So he was so excited that when he went to the doctor and he stepped on the scale and he got all his blood tests back, that just changed his own mind. I didn't see the same.
Right. Well, so here now, Karen, I have no less than 1,000 questions to ask you, because I have been wanting to talk about this kindness philosophy, your mission, your message, in relationship, obviously, to where you began with your the food that you've had, but more along the lines of professionalism and development and just human interaction. And you really spoke right now that I think is something applicable to everybody. You can't force anybody to do anything. Maybe you can lead and live by example, and hopefully people who are wanting and willing to change will follow suit. But just like in the dietetics or the healthcare provider's profession, we have what's called, you know, readiness and stages of change. Some people are at a pre-contemplative stage. They're just kind of like toying with something. Some people are ready to take action. Other people might never want to get there because not to go down a whole psychological avenue, but there might be, you know, family trauma, childhood situations that are going on that haven't fully been processed. And there's anger and displacement and projection that's happening there for them to want to constantly be on the defense. And so as I was listening to some of your talks, as I was looking through some of your posts, I was reading through your website, so many things came up in my mind, because I really do try my best to live by kindness. I will share with everybody here, I might not have said this before. Well, I've often been transparent with my mental health issues. So I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder back in 1998. And it wasn't necessarily something that defined me. It just helped me understand a little bit about some of the emotions and struggles that I was going through. And I was able to treat it through medicine and through therapy. And now I think I have it a little bit more under control. Without needing pharmaceuticals anymore, because those were not working so well for me, unfortunately. But my point is that I also had a lot of anger management stuff going on, and a lot of unresolved familial issues and things that I just kept carrying on me. And so now flash forward to my 50-something year old self, where I definitely have a lot more self-awareness. I've done a lot of processing. I've done a lot of work on myself, but you know, I'm not perfect. And I also feel like I revert sometimes to certain things that stick in me when I'm in certain situations. But ultimately, I do try to come from a place of love and kindness. And I know that we've, in my world, I've had discussions with my friends and some of my colleagues that, you know, kindness does not equal weakness. But even if it did, there is strength in vulnerability. However, being vulnerable, especially right now with a lot of the political turmoil, although I would, you know, venture to say, pick a decade where there wasn't stuff going on, because I'm sure there was always something happening, and whatever generation was going through something, there was always going to be some strife and conflict. But I guess my point is, especially tying into the pandemic and having to live through this isolation and some chaos and butting of heads in certain things, that even the kindness, even the potential vulnerability can put a really big mental health strain on someone, especially like me, when we are maybe empaths or we're coming from a place of feeling a little bit, not so much broken, but just, you know, disillusioned and a little fragile. So I want you to speak on that if you can, because kindness can feel like a flipping uphill battle all the time when you're trying so hard to be compassionate to other people, to lead and live by example in that way. I'm a professor. I also used to be a manager of, you know, staff members in corporate America and in city government as well. And it just always feels like there's stuff going on that I just wish everybody would read the same books I'm reading and go to the same workshops I'm going to and do the same work I'm doing. But you can't force people to do that. So how do you help people see it's worth it to keep at it? Because sometimes I really do just feel like going, thank you and good night. I'm going to live under my bed and never talk to another human being ever.
Well, first of all, thank you for sharing that. And I was on, I was leading a Kind Leader guided book club today. And one person brought up a, you know, great point, and they said, you know, I think we forget that everybody is going through something. Mm-hmm. And some things we see, right? Some things we can see are outward struggles people are having. Some things we don't see, the inward trauma that people carry with them. And I think that the way that I think about this is that a lot of unkindness comes from focusing on the ends, or thinking that there's ways that we have to do things, all those shoulda, woulda, coulda, mm-hmm. all the things that, you know, we might take in from systems that say, okay, if you're not the CEO by the time you're 30, you didn't accomplish enough. If you don't do, you know, if you don't get an A in every class, you're not good enough. That we're focused a lot on those ends and making, like, somehow we think we have to make this huge, gigantic impact. I actually am really focused every day on what I call the means, just the way, the how. So when I meet someone or I'm doing something, I'm not actually trying to change the world. I'm actually just trying to live according to my values, to be kind to people. And in doing that, it's going to make a better, kinder interaction whatever we have, right? And it's going to make things better for that other person. and it's going to make things better for me. Do I hope that that person is going to take that example and do something else with it and be kind to someone else? Sure. Can I guarantee that they're going to do that? Absolutely not. And I think that if I felt that I had to be responsible for that big hole, I would feel very frustrated. But I understand that I'm 60, right? I understand that I can only be responsible for this part. I can't force anybody to do anything else, but I can control the things that my own thoughts, to a certain extent, I can control the words that come out of my mouth. I can control the way I act and react. And if I've made one thing better for one person today, to me, that's a huge success. And that's all that needs to happen. So perhaps that maybe that being in the moment, focusing on other people and not worrying about that whole big thing. People ask me all the time, well, what's the point of being kind in an unkind world?
Right.
It is. If I'm kind to you, it's going to be better for you. And in making it better for you, that's going to be better for me. And if every single person just did one more kind thing a day, eventually the system would change.
Oh, I really hope, you know, as you're speaking, it felt like a weight was taking off of me that I don't have to be responsible for all of the external concentric circles around me that, you know, what's it called? The sphere of influence, right? So whatever my small microcosm universe is, whether it's just my students or my family members or my friends, people that I see on a much more regular daily basis, weekly basis, that if I can at least just affect them. And I want to also talk too, because you have news about a TEDx talk that you did that just recently, like hot off the presses here, just came out. And you spoke about that like trickle effect of if somebody is mean to one person, or, you know, road rage, or you take it out on your kid, then that person's going to probably end up projecting outwardly as well. And then what's the good in all that? But you don't realize how far the damage has been done in all of those degrees of separation. So can you talk a little bit about that talk that you gave, and share with us too some of the, maybe the strategies or the tips that you might want to give, without, you know, I want to obviously make sure people watch the video, but you know, share a little bit of some of the things that you touched upon in that discussion.
Oh, thank you. And the TED Talk is about why kind leadership is important, and it's the answer to all of the systemic problems that we're seeing, and also five easy steps that you can take to start leading with kindness now. And I think that all of us have experienced this. Perhaps we go to work, we have the angry leader who shouts at the, you know, shouts at us, or the employee. The employee goes home, shout at their spouse or partner. The partner shouts at the child. The child kicks the dog. That's actually an old cartoon from when I was growing up. But it's not a cartoon and it's not a joke, right? Because what happens is then that child goes to school and bullies the other kids. Mm-hmm. And then that same child grows up. And of course, we carry with us what we've learned from our parents, who are our very first leaders. Sometimes we think they're our first teachers, but they're our very first leaders. Mm-hmm. And then those kids grow up and become that angry boss. And when you think about it, we learn by the example of those who lead us. And whether that's, again, a parent, a teacher, a sports coach, a boss at work, a political figure, that we do what our leaders do. And so when we see people in leadership roles who are acting unkindly, people who denigrate other people based on the way they look, their religion, their, you know, sexual orientation, their food choices, right?
Right.
that we take those things in, and then when we, as I say, put on our leader hat, we think it's okay to do those same things. So it's very easy, because we're not even conscious of a lot. And I loved it that you started out asking me about, you know, my experiences with food and culture growing up, because we're not even conscious of all the systems that have actually played a role in our own development and our views on leadership and other things, right?
Absolutely. And
So we act in certain ways, but the way to change the way we act is simply to practice. So the first thing is to realize that you're a leader, that when you don't have to have a formal title. You don't have to be the president of the United States to be a leader. You're influencing people all of the time.
Right.
So, you know, recognize that you're a leader. Then actually, once you recognize that you're a leader, stop and listen to what people are saying. Treat people, practice treating them with kindness. And kindness and kind leadership, I say, is a practice that takes practice. And you don't have to be perfect all of the time. In the TED Talk, I tell the story about my husband leaving a coffee mug on our peninsula, and I don't like visual clutter. So this was only like a couple months ago. So he came downstairs and I yelled at him. Right? Well, the dog was sick in the night, and instead of putting away the dishes like he normally does, he took care of the dog, he cleaned up the barf, he washed all of the towels and things. Instead of being thankful, you know what I was? I was grumpy and angry. And nobody is perfect. So if you are practicing and you don't live up to your expectation, the great thing about kindness is that there is always an opportunity coming around in the next minute to practice again. So actually, two mornings ago, I came downstairs and there was a spoon on the peninsula. So you know what I did? I put it in the dishwasher. And then my husband came downstairs for breakfast and I didn't say anything. I just simply put the spoon away. There is an opportunity coming around to try again, right? And so I think we need to remember that as human beings, we actually come with negativity bias built in. So assuming that positive intent is going to be really difficult. So actually yesterday I was driving to a client and I pulled out of my driveway and then I turned to go down the street and there's another street that's very close to my street. And this person just came zooming out of that street and nearly hit me. Like if I hadn't put my foot on the brake hard, we would have had an accident. And my first thought was, I'm not going to say it out loud, right?
Right.
And then I thought, wait, you just had this fright. Instead of getting all in a rage, think about this person. They made a driving mistake. They probably weren't out to get you specifically. Maybe they thought that I had a stop sign, but I didn't, right? Or that they had a stop sign. People make driving mistakes all the time. I have made many driving mistakes in my life. And I just stopped myself and I forced myself to think something different. I took a few breaths and I went on. So it's a constant struggle, even for me, a person who, you know, spends a lot of time working on thinking about kindness. But in that struggle and in that practice, we're guaranteed going to get better. And we need to be kind to ourselves, right? Because nobody is going to be perfect. And it's okay to make a mistake. And then what should we do? Go and apologize, right?
Right.
Change our behavior. Put the spoon in the dishwasher the next time on your own, which is what I did.
Right. And this is why people's parents will be like, clean up after your brother, even though you didn't make the mess. It's like, why should I be responsible for somebody else? But instead, what they're saying is just be respectful about the environment in which you live. And so there's no need to be pointing fingers. You're also allowed to accommodate any of that person's maybe shortcomings or oversights, and just clean it up. Just make it a clean place. I get that now. Obviously, when I was a kid, I was like very mad about having to clean up after my brother. But that really speaks to, I guess, for lack of a better phrase, things that people might be a little bit more aware of these days, something called like emotional intelligence or the ego and the id, you know, how we're always trying to protect ourselves or feel a little bit defensive. But it really does, I think it takes less energy to, even though it feels a little bit more difficult to process, but I think it takes less energy just to you know, breathe, let things go, and try to manage some of those emotions that are knee-jerk, and those knee-jerk reactions end up manifesting in physical discomfort too, whether it's illness, disease. I know for a fact when I get stressed out, I have a recurring back muscle I have a back muscle injury that recurs when I get stressed out. I immediately can feel the tension in my back and I feel like it's going to tweak again. And so I have to calm myself down, release my shoulders, try to do some breathing exercises, stretch it out, but just also manage, you know, how I'm reacting to the world around me. And while I wish I could help everyone else lead and live the way that I'm trying to do, that's not a realistic way to look at it. So like you said before, I can only be in control of the things that I'm in control of. And as long as I can focus on those things, remember my values, understand my own why of, you know, what it is that I'm doing and why I'm doing it, and allow myself to be responsible for that, then that's the best I can do. I want to also talk a little bit about your book and your foundation. Can you walk us through how some of these things came about? How long have you been working with this organization that you have together? And let me start by asking, what's happening right now? And then where do you see it going in the future, whether it's, you know, 2, 5, 10, 20 years down the line?
Sure. So, you know, all of those horrible incidences we see now of people who are just acting in really outrageous ways on airplanes and
right.
Well, before COVID, I actually traveled full time for about 5 years. And I want to tell you, those incidents didn't get reported, but they happened all the time.
Interesting. So
I was sitting in like just behind first class one day. And I saw this person, like a first class passenger who was upset something about their suitcase, punched the flight attendant. And as I was traveling around, and then due to some political things, I just saw there's so much unkindness happening that just doesn't need to happen. And I'm traveling all around. And I thought, I have a master's degree in sculpture to start out in. When I see a problem, I always think somebody should do something about the problem, and that somebody is me. So right. These little green round buttons with a little red heart, and I said, I'm going to take them with me, and when I see someone doing something kind, I'm just going to go up to them, thank them for kindness, give them a button. And you know what my husband said? He said, you're nuts. And I said, I'm going to do it anyways. And he said, I know you are, because we've been married for almost 40 years. So I took these buttons, and when I was in the airport and I saw somebody who was doing something kind, like if somebody dropped a scarf, someone else picked it up and gave it back to the person. I walked up to them and I said, hi, that was a really kind thing you did. I'd like to give you this button to recognize your kindness. Oh. And the most shocking thing happened. People went crazy. They said to me, can I take a selfie with you to send to my family? Nothing like this has ever happened to me.
Right.
Gate attendants jumped over the, you know, counters and said, can I hug you?
Oh.
And then I realized how important it is to recognize kindness. And I thought, well, let me see if I can put the foundation together to do this. And we're not a fundraising foundation, we're a kindness raising foundation, because what I realized is that one tiny little act of kindness makes a huge positive difference. And so actually what I really think, because so many people ask me, can you give me another button so I could give it to someone else when I see them being kind? That actually, when we do that act of kindness, when we recognize someone's kindness, we do give them the example.
Yeah.
And they do pass it on. So we're a grassroots movement spreading kindness to person to person around the world just by recognizing, doing acts of kindness. We focus on thinking, speaking, and acting kindly, and recognizing people's acts of kindness. And so it's been 4 years now, and we have given out about 35,000 buttons.
Oh my gosh, that is amazing. And, you know, like you said too, it's not, granted, that's such a lovely gesture, and people who were coming to hug and thank you in return, you could also have been met with somebody being like, get out of here, lady, you're crazy, I don't need your stupid button. So the point is, though, you still have to maintain your end of things. Like, it's still sometimes a little hard to keep going in a world, like you said, that might not reflect kindness towards back to you. But it's about that combination of those three keys of not just thinking it, but also speaking it and acting it, and try to maintain that even when you're not feeling like it's being reciprocated.
Exactly. And you know what? I carry buttons with me all of the time, and it forces me to actually, instead of look for all the bad things that's going on,
right,
it forces me to look for people who are being kind. It forces, and it's totally changed my perspective, and I know it's changed other people's perspective. And we do pop-up kindness stands. We're just going to do, we're going to have a Kindness Matters Saturday for a bakery in a suburb about an hour away from me that's actually been the victim of a hate crime. Mm. And so we're putting together a day of kindness, and we're going to have a kindness parade, because there's not nothing we can do about things.
Right.
We can be kind. We can, if it doesn't, it's not going to change the whole world or the political landscape, but it's going to make the owner of this bakery who had a hate crime committed against her and her bakery, it's going to make her feel better. And it's going to make people who come to the kindness event feel better. So that's really what we're working on. And then books like The Kind Leader and The New School for Kind Leaders, so we can teach people how to lead with kindness. All of the royalties, actually, I published 6 books, and all of the royalties for all of those books fund the foundation. So anyone who buys a book, they're going to get the learning from the book, and they're also going to make a donation to Love and Kindness Project Foundation.
Oh my gosh. It really, again, it's the gift that keeps on giving. And what you said before too, about the community, the outpouring of love and making somebody who felt very outcasted and obviously in that case, traumatized possibly too, then now that support, like that, hopefully it might not outdo the damage that was done, but it makes it a little bit easier to kind of go through that, to process that, to know that you have a community that just loves and supports you and wants you to get, you know, be able to feel compassion and to feel kindness in that way. So Karen, I have a few more questions to ask you as we start winding down our conversation. What on your end allows you to keep going? So how are you taking care of yourself? Because this can be quite a burden to be spreading the love. And are you also self-caring enough for yourself? What is kind of like your routines, a week in the life of you these days?
Well, one of the things that I do, and I don't know if you've seen that some of my posts on this, is that every Saturday I have what I call my creativity day. So as an artist, I tend to process a lot of things by drawing. I have a master's degree in sculpture, and I used to do a lot of steel welding, but I don't do that anymore here in the suburbs. So I actually design and sew a lot of my own clothes. So on Saturdays, the best thing that I like to do is spend the day. I don't actually work on Saturday and Sunday. I spend the day with my husband, and then I spend the day sewing, drawing, doing all of those creative things mm-hmm. that just rejuvenate me. But here's really the thing, because people always say, oh my goodness, Karen, you're doing like a million things. The thing about, and I always suggest this to people, is that when you're feeling overburdened and exhausted, the best way to feel better is to do a tiny kind act of kindness for someone. And that somehow in doing that, in thinking about, and it could just be very tiny, like empty the dishwasher, right? For someone, take the dog for a walk for someone, go over to your neighbor's house, ask them if there's something you can give them a hand with. That somehow in taking that focus off of ourselves and doing something kind for someone else, it gives me anyways a ton of energy. So that's actually for me, when people ask how can I be kind to myself, it seems a little counterintuitive, but I would say oftentimes doing a kindness for someone else and seeing how much joy it gives them, it will give you just as much joy, and remind you that we should, that you're helping the other person because they're not perfect and they need help. Mm-hmm. It's actually okay for you not to be perfect and you need help too. There's 7 billion people here on earth because we're all imperfect and we're all here on earth to help each other. If we were perfect, there would only need to be one person, right? But that's not the way it is.
Right. And, you know, I totally agree with that too, with the act of kindness when you're feeling somewhat depleted. You know, most people will be like, I got to go for a run. And I'm like, I have to go help somebody. Like, I just need to do an act of volunteerism to make me just kind of forget what's going on and be able to share that energy with someone else. And then in that respect too, I glean something from there. I feel like I've done my part as far as just being a kind human. That person maybe then goes on to feel a little bit better about themselves and their day. And I really do agree with you in that sense, that even when we're feeling a little bit overwhelmed or stressed out or whatever, just having that act of kindness come out could really help with alleviating that stress. So let me ask you now too, on in the world of social media and online virtual platforms, since we do spend a lot of time on there, where are some of the go-to people can find you? Because of course I'm going to link to all of this when I publish this episode, but where can people find you if they're looking for you right now?
Well, if you would like to receive a simple way to think kindly, speak kindly, or act kindly every single day on Facebook, you can join our group. It's at The Kindlies, K-I-N-D-L-I-E-S. And I post a very simple way to think, speak, or act kindly each day. You can also find that on LinkedIn, on the Love and Kindness Project Foundation page. You can follow me, Karen Ross, on LinkedIn. And actually, the latest thing that I've been doing that I'm having a super fun time with is on TikTok. If you follow Kindness Karen, you can hear all of my kindness stories every day.
Oh, that is so cool. Good for you for being on TikTok. I have an account, but I have not mastered. I definitely scroll through incessantly many hours a day on TikTok. So that's so cool that you're on there now too, Karen. Very cool. All right, I'm going to put links to everything on there. Before we officially wrap up and I end up asking you my final two questions of our conversation today, is there anything else that you would like to share, anything that we did not cover, anything else that, you know, maybe you want to touch upon a little bit more in detail if I didn't give you a chance to do so previously?
I just want to say that oftentimes people think that kindness and leadership can't go together. But really, the answer to the problems that we're having is kindness, because when you think about it, almost all of the problems that occur are failures of kindness and failures of leadership. And for people who want to learn more, please do buy the Kind Leader book and visit our website at kindleadership.org. So that's it.
Thank you for that. I will say, from being somebody who, I do not do well when people put me in a tough love boot camp kind of situation. I don't love that. I also think that, well, leadership in particular and also respect in particular are things that I feel have to be earned. So while I might have a manager or a supervisor who thinks they are in a leadership role, they're not really reflecting leadership qualities down to me if they don't abide by certain rules that I have in my head. And that is to speak kindly, to treat me as if you were in a nurturing situation, to allow me to grow and not see me as competition, because the whole point is I hope to be your future colleague one day. And wouldn't that be lovely if you mentored me through this thing? And when I get in situations with not just family situations, but also work situations where people speak unkindly to me, I immediately shut down. I will not be productive. And I will, if I have the ability to do so, I will walk away / quit / never be seen again. And that's unfortunate, because I am an awesome person to hang out with and you probably want me in your circle, but I do not allow people unkindly. And so that's something that I really think is important to recognize, that it doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be just because maybe you grew up in an environment, dear listener, where it felt a little bit more strenuous, where you might have had somebody who was domineering, somebody who wasn't able to process whatever trauma they went through, and they treated you unkindly, that this is your time to kind of break that generational chain and or be able to fix whatever might be currently broken or in the way to being broken in your whatever system there is that you're working in. So if this is, you know, government, political, you're working for the corporate America, whatever it is that you're doing, just play a role in there somewhere. Help people see their biases, get some training involved, buy Karen's book, spread the word, and try to treat people with love and kindness. I have so appreciated our conversation today, Karen. And so I'm going to leave you with my two final famous questions of my podcast, which are somewhat related. And that is, what is on your plate today? And so I want you to answer me as far as what you have on your plate in the business or personal world that you're, you know, what are you doing next when we are done with our conversation? And then I need to know what you're eating next as well.
All right. What I'm doing next is actually, this is the last thing of my Friday today. So after this, I am going to go and work on creating our Kindness Treasure Map for Love and Kindness Project Foundation Kindness Treasure Hunt that we're having to celebrate World Kindness Day. So I'm going to do a little bit of work on that. And then every Friday night for the last 15 years, my husband and I, and when kids were living here, we've gone to the same Japanese restaurant. And they know how to make my favorite things in a vegan way, and we will go and we will order takeout and bring it home. And every Friday, starting at this point, I'm starting to think about my lovely dinner and Ellen, the waitress who's been there the same amount of time. It's like being part of a family, part of a community. When we were eating in, we knew all of the other regular diners who came at the same time. I've actually spoken at one of their organizations. So food brings us together, right?
Oh my gosh, it sure does. I love that. What a wonderful way to wrap up your week, your weekend, or start your weekend and your Friday too. You are fantastic. I am so happy and pleased that we came in touch with each other in the virtual space and that we are now able to call each other friends as well. And I really look forward to continuing following you and spreading your mission and your message of leading with kindness. Thank you so much, Karen.
Thank you so much, Tina.
Thank you so much for joining me this week on the Dish with Dina podcast. I am Dina D'Alessandro, registered dietitian, nutritionist, founder, and chief executive life changer at Dish with Dina, and I'm also your host. If you like what you heard, I would be so grateful if you could subscribe to this podcast, leave a review, and share this with others who you think might benefit from what we have to offer on these episodes. You can also join my mailing list at dishwithdina.com or email me at info@dishwithdina.com with questions, comments, feedback, and if you'd like to be a guest on a future episode, because everybody eats and we all have a story to share. I hope you tune back in next week when we dish again.